Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to another Love Letters Live. And today we are doing Marshall Mann Part 2 because Marshall tells a story in such wonderful detail that we just couldn't do it all in one sitting. So this is Marshall is back with us. And Marshall, I'm going to go, well, for those of you who might have missed the last one, Marshall is somebody I've known most of my life now. And we've become very good friends as adults. I am happy to say, thanks to Facebook, having placed his photograph on my Facebook page saying, do you know him? I got so excited. We've been out of touch for many years. So Marshall was in the meat business. And when we left off last time, he was talking about, remind me of the man's name, Turner.
Glenn W. Turner,
who was someone, well, you just start. Start over with Glenn W. Turner. So kind of do a little recap, okay?
Nice okay. Now. Glenn Turner was born in a charity ward in North Carolina. And he had a hair lip. And he was destined to be a failure. You heard of born salespeople? No such thing as born salespeople. But they said that Glenn W. Turner, when he was born, would have been better if he wasn't born at all. Would have been better for his parents and for his family and for everybody else. And you've heard that about, you know, other children
sometimes,
with handicaps.
Yes.
Yeah, and they turn out to be, everybody has something special about them.
That's right.
And Glenn W. Turner did, and we'll see what that was. But Glenn was not... He was not stupid, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think when we left off, and I want you to continue okay. just in this line, but you had said that he learned how to make his handicap work for him.
He did.
Because he realized that people would feel sorry for, and he could sell them.
Well, let's and he we'll was skip selling, over to that.
He was selling sewing machines at this point?
Right. He
okay.
was selling. He was in. He went into the sewing machine
how did,
business.
Wait, how did you meet him?
I didn't meet him. I was inspired by him.
Oh, that was, I see.
I met the fellow that worked for me.
Oh, because...
Gave me a set of tapes.
Yes.
That
I thought,
told the story about Glenn W. Turner, and I'll tell you about the tapes. We'll
okay,
get to that part.
Okay, but I thought you actually also met him. Okay,
no,
good that you corrected.
And his tapes were 36 tapes, and the last 12 was his life story. And his story.
Oh.
So, and the other one were all motivational sales tapes on how to be a good salesman and that. But, and
I
we'll
see.
Go into that a little bit.
Okay.
So, but Glenn's life, he failed in selling sewing machines, it was a commission job, so they didn't fire him, but he would sell a few, and then he would not sell anything. Well, finally, he figured out how to get them sold. You do something long enough, and you get good at it, you know, and you figure out what your strong points are. Well, Glenn got real good at it, and he became a really good salesman. In fact, he became the best sewing machine salesman the company had, and he was selling lots of sewing machines, and what he used was when he made enough money, he had his hair lip fixed. However... He always, when he was selling sewing machines, he always talked funny like this.
Oh, he would
and
just force
would,
that?
Yeah, he would just put it in there.
Yes.
He didn't have to talk that way, but he talked that way because people would feel sorry for him and then they'd buy stuff from him.
Goodness.
So that was Glenn W. Turner's kind of growing through this thing. And then after he's in that, he went into the... somebody talked to him about the cosmetic business and selling cosmetics, and I think the company was Holiday Magic, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And but Holiday Magic, they sold franchises, and they told Glenn that the people were making a lot of money, and Glenn believed what they told him. Well, they lied; they weren't making a lot of money. But Glenn believed what they said, and just like I told you about the selling 5 boxes and selling 10 boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn believed what they said, so he went out there and started selling franchises, and he was selling as many as they said that he could sell, because he believed he could do that.
Well, that
he
that just,
did it.
Isn't that just perfect? Isn't
so
that
he
the
became
perfect
the
lesson?
Highest producing
wow.
guy selling these, and he's making a lot of money for the company. However, the one wrong thing with the company is they were selling cosmetic franchises. The only thing they didn't have was cosmetics. So... it was a big pyramid thing, and so he thought he would...
I'm so glad I don't have to talk that you're doing it, because I couldn't.
He started up... he thought he'd start up his own company. So he started up And the name of his company was Coscott Interplanetary, was the name of his company. And he started, he hired a guy to make the, a chemist to make the cosmetics. And then he started hiring people and selling franchises. And he was selling franchise. And he was doing really good with that business. And then he decided to branch out, start this program called Dare to Be Great. And this guy, Carol...
Which he clearly knew something about.
Carol Risman, who worked for with me, worked for me when selling steaks and seafood. He had just bought this thing. And when he told me, he was driving an old beat-up Volkswagen. And he told me that he got these tapes and wanted to know if I'd like to listen to them. And I said, I don't have time to listen to him. I said, I go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning. I go home at 7 o'clock at night. When am I going to listen to him? He said, listen to him in the car when you're going to work back and forth. So I said, okay, I'll listen to him. So he told me he paid $5,000 for this set of tapes. $5,000. I said, you got to be nuts. And he says, well, here's the, what the deal was supposed to be. You buy them for $5,000, and then you sell them. Every time you sell one, you make $2,500, so you become a distributor. So you sell two of them, you got your money back, and then every one you sell after that, you're making $2,500 a clip. Now, that's a pretty good deal. So I would have probably done that, except Carol, right after he bought them, the state of California outlawed it as a pyramid scheme.
Oh.
And he lost his $5,000, which he borrowed from Beneficial at 18% because he figured he was going to pay it back in a couple of weeks. 18% didn't matter, but it wasn't 18 weeks. So he ended up suing Beneficial.
Wait, so this is the guy who was working for you, this happened.
This guy is working for me. So, and he turned out to be one of my best salespeople, and he did real well in that business, and I think he was real successful even after that. So he gave me these tapes, and I listened to Glenn's story, and I listened to his failure, and everything he went through and how he became successful, and I thought to myself, you know, if he could do that, boy, I could do a whole lot better than what I'm doing. And I was doing pretty good. So I'm figuring I can do more and I can do better. And that set of tapes changed my life, and then I started getting more tapes. And
well, wait,
started,
so how did it actually affect you that the tapes changed your life? What is it that spoke to you?
A guy that was born in a charity ward with a hair lip could make millions and millions and millions of dollars. He became.
But did he say how to do it?
He did. He told him just what he just told his story. All you got to do is hear his story, and then if he could do it, you could do it. Okay. Then he became also. Now, the guy with the hair lip now, remember who we're talking about,
Glenn.
Mr. Failure, okay, who's never supposed to be, became a big motivator of people. He got people to join his companies, to go to work for his companies. He would get them excited. He would go to rallies. There would be thousands of people there, and they would yell and cheer and how wonderful he was. This guy was just, I mean, if he told you to buy something, you bought it. I mean, you were sold. He just was convincing. I remember the Rice Brothers. I don't know if you remember the Rice Brothers.
No.
They were two little dwarfs. They played in a Jerry Lewis movie, and they were also, and they were real estate agents too. They used to go in the houses, and they used to say, look at this carpet. Look at this house. Look at this carpet. It's knee high. So, but they were really delightful people. But they got started with Glenn W. Turner. That's where they. And
so
Glenn told me
there is no such thing as born to fail.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, there's born to win, not born to fail.
Oh, good.
Born to fail is a mental thing. If you think you're going to be a failure, you are. If you think you are a failure, you are. If you think you're going to be successful and you believe it and you keep telling yourself that, you just over and over, repetition and affirmations are important. I do affirmations every day. I got about 18 of them that I do. And everybody should have affirmations, and your affirmations you do in the positive. You don't do, I'm going to try to lose weight or I'm going to try to do this. You just say, I am. And you am, you know, you are this, you know, I'm going to sell, you know, 15 houses this month. I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do. And then if you keep telling yourself what you're going to do, you're going to go out and do it. So Glenn W. Turner, okay, so the Rice brothers, he told these two little guys, mm-hmm. and they were still in high school, by the way, when he recruited them to his company, the high school kids, and he said, you guys are like two dimes and a handful of nickels. You're not as big, but you're worth twice as much. That's the kind of a guy that Glenn W. Turner was, and that's the way, and he would motivate, and he would take people, and he liked people who had handicaps because he had a handicap, and he would tell them how great they could be. He says, I can do it, you can do it, they can do it. You
are astounding. This is just astounding.
You were great. So I started with that, and then after I listened to that about seven or eight times, somebody came in and selling motivational cassette tapes, and I bought some of those from mm-hmm. him, and I listened to those. And then they had the possibility. There used to be a magazine called Success Unlimited, and W. Clement Stone owned that magazine, and he also owned Combined Insurance Companies of America. And he started these PMA rallies. And at the PMA rallies, they had the speakers. This was, and they did it in Kansas City was the first one. I think Los Angeles was the second or third one. And they did about, six or seven major cities the first time they did it. And they did it was 1976, mm-hmm. Centennial, bicentennial year for the United States. The first one was December of 75, and it was in Kansas City, and then they recorded that, and then they sold those tapes, and everybody sold their tapes, these speakers, and the speakers that were there were W. Clement Stone, mm-hmm. Who was a real motivator, and he owned Combined Insurance Companies of America, and they sold insurance the same way I sold steaks and seafood, mm-hmm. door to door, office to office. And so I could really relate to him, and he was a big inspiration to me. W. Clement Stone, and then there was my mind is going. Cavett Roberts, mm-hmm. Paul Harvey, Zig Ziglar.
Oh, that's
who was
my
all-time favorite. And Zig just passed away last year, I believe. But he was the best of the best.
That's so nice that you're open.
He was my sales trainer, and then Norman Vincent Peale, mm-hmm. and all these guys were these were the best of the best that were at this thing. And I was excited about this thing when somebody called me that they're putting this on and they were trying to get tickets sold, and they were, you buy so many tickets, you get free tickets. So I gave them to all my distributors, and I, told everybody they go. I sold my neighbors and to everything. Well, I sold probably 50 to 100 tickets to that thing. I didn't make any money on it. I just believed mm-hmm. in it, and I did get some free tickets out of the deal. But then not only did I get that, but the guy liked me, so he invited me to Zig Ziglar's seminar that he was putting on. There was a $150 seminar, 1976, and I went there, and it was a great seminar, and I ended up buying a set of tapes from him called Closing the Sale, and it was 8 cassette tapes for $200. That's mm-hmm. a lot of money. But you know what? That $200 came back to me probably over 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. That's how much I made. Mm-hmm. I made way more than that, in fact, out of that. It taught me how to be a great salesperson.
You know something? I'm listening to you, and I'm watching you while you talk, and I keep going back to when you say, you started off our first conversation with, you dropped out of high school because you weren't too smart. And I'm listening to you, and of course what I can see is, and you would, I'm sure, say yes to this, it's so obvious, that at your core, you are a brilliant learner.
Well, I wasn't too smart about dropping out of school. That's what I meant by not too smart.
Okay,
that
I
was
understand.
The thing I did that wasn't too smart. Leaving school was dumb. Okay? People do dumb things. In fact, I was thinking about writing a book called You Can Fix Stupid.
Oh, good.
No, in fact, it was Who Said You Can't Fix Stupid? Because you can't. We all do stupid things,
Right.
And not just me, but everybody.
But evidently, there was something that you just weren't interested in learning in high school. I mean, the thing that you needed to learn wasn't being presented to you yet.
Yeah, I had a few classes that I liked, but most of them I was just kind of bored at, and you know, I didn't apply myself.
Right. Okay.
I just, you know, wasn't motivated. You got to be motivated. Now I listen to stuff every day. I get educated, listening to audio books, audio tapes. Mm-hmm. I got my education from 1973 when I got introduced to Glenn W. Turner. To 1980, when I went to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, I was on the freeway a lot in my business.
So I used to
hate the freeway in California. People would yell and scream at you. And
they still do.
Yeah, I know. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to leave California. But once I started listening to tapes, the freeway didn't bother me anymore. I didn't care.
My car was your classroom.
My car was my classroom, absolutely. My truck was my classroom. Yeah. I had a truck.
Yeah.
But I put it, and then they didn't have cassette players in trucks or cars at that time. So I had to buy the cassette and put
it
in there. Yeah. No, I didn't. I had it when I first did it. I did it on the seat.
Uh-huh.
But then I went to a store and bought one that you could clip under the dashboard and hook it into your system. So that's
so why did you leave California and go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho? What did you know about Idaho?
Bing Crosby sang a song years ago. Those dear hearts and gentle people who live in my hometown, and I didn't even know it was Bing Crosby that sang it.
But was that about Idaho?
There was a part in there about Idaho. I didn't remember that part until after I went up there, and then I heard the song. While I was living in Idaho, and there's a place in Idaho that someday I'm going to go.
Oh.
And Bing Crosby had a house on Hayden Lake.
Oh,
and I live on top of the hill overlooking Hayden Lake, looking right at that house.
So again, you got motivated by something you heard on tape, kind of.
No, I heard it on that one. I got as
or
a
the
kid.
Radio.
That
but
was
you,
when
but
I was
heard,
a kid.
But you heard it.
I mean, always dreamed, you know, and I talked when Carol and I first got married, which was 1959, I talked about moving to a small town. And we went and looked at places.
Right.
And,
yes.
You know, then it didn't happen. And then when I got married to Dolly, and I talked about looking. We started looking for towns in 1967 when we got married.
Because you knew you wanted something saner than what you were.
68. No, I wanted to be in a small town where people knew your name. They, you know, and, you know, you could get, and they, hi, Marshall, how are you? And how's everything going? And how Dolly? And this kind of stuff. And I wanted to live in a place like that. I didn't like. When you fly into Los Angeles and you see all the people, there are millions and millions of people, but they don't mean anything. You don't, they're not real. And I lived in Los Angeles for 40 years, born in Hollywood at Cedars of Lebanon Hospital, which is now the Church of Scientology.
They moved, yes.
Yeah. And Paul, my son, was born at the same hospital.
I remember. Yeah.
But I wanted to live in a small town, so we looked for a long time. We were ready to move to Grants Pass, Oregon, and I was having problems with Paul, and I was talking to a social worker with him. He just wasn't getting along. He was doing good in school. He was doing good. Wasn't doing drugs or anything like that. Just, you know, getting along with the stepmom. His mom had died, and, you know, that was a little problem. That was a problem for him.
Yeah.
But I told the the social worker that, you know, we're moving to Grants Pass, Oregon. And he said, why do you want to know Grants Pass, Oregon? He says, have you ever been to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho? I said, what's that?
Oh.
He says, well, before you move anywhere, you need to go see Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
So it wasn't just Bing Crosby.
Well, no, that was the thing that wanted me to go to, and it wasn't Bing Crosby. I mean, it was just that song.
I understand,
And then you hear stories about small towns and
of course,
Mayberry and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I wanted to be in a small town, and you know something? When we moved to Coeur d'Alene, the third day I was there, I went into the bank, and the bank teller called me by name, Mr. Bing, she said. And I didn't know anybody there. I'm brand new in this town. I know not a soul. And I was really impressed. I went to the market a second time, and the checker called me by name. Now, I went to Vaughn's Market for 13 years in Calabasas, and they never, ever called me by name. I went to the bank. It was Security Pacific Bank. We banked there. I had my account there and everything for my business. And a couple of people knew me there. But, I mean, nobody else knew me there. I even sold steaks there, you know. And the people I sold steaks to, of course, knew me, you know, that yes. one, because I would be the steak man. But it just, there was
feel.
No,
it's feel.
Just
wow.
a real different feel. And just, you know, that feeling that you got, it was great. It was like night and day. But listening to the cassette tapes that I listened to on from 73 to 1980, I got the equivalent of a double doctorate in psychology and motivation
sure.
and a triple doctorate in sales.
Mm-hmm.
I went from being a 5-box-a-day salesperson
mm-hmm.
to selling over 100 boxes a day on certain days. Not every day, mm-hmm. but I was selling never less than 30. So 30 to 100 boxes a day. That was a lot of money I was making. It was great business, and I did you know, really well in it.
And
I liked it. But when I was listening to all these tapes,
yeah.
I needed to graduate. I needed to go into a big ticket item. I wanted to do something different. I had a lot of mentors. This guy, G. Worthington Hipple, he introduced air conditioning, and I loved listening to this guy. Great stories. And so when I went to Coeur d'Alene, I had a house that we tried to sell in 1976 for $34,000.
In L.A.?
In Calabasas.
Calabasas, yeah.
Okay, for $34,000, and I couldn't sell it. That was 1976 we tried to sell it. 3 years later, 1979, I put it on the market in December, went on a cruise, came back from the cruise. We listed it for $115,000, sold it for $117,000, had 5 people waiting in line to buy it, and I made all this money in the house, and I had a friend of mine who was an insurance agent encouraging me to buy houses, foreclosures in our neighborhood, and for $25,000. And I said, I'm too busy with my business. I don't have time for mm-hmm. that. And I accumulated all this money. As good as I did in the meat business, I didn't accumulate much money. I had some money in the bank. We had about $30,000 saved up, which was pretty good. I mean, that was my house cost $30,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was pretty good. Most people don't have $30,000 in the bank.
Is that what made you realize that real estate would be a good place for you, though, in Coeur d'Alene?
Oh, I was going to Coeur d'Alene to invest in real estate uh-huh. because the market hadn't gone up there yet.
Uh-huh.
The way I looked at it, which it never did get up as high as we are down here. You know, I mean, it's a different market. Our prices up there are about a third to a fourth of what they cost in San Francisco and Los
California's
Angeles.
And,
yeah.
Yes, okay.
So there's a lot of places that are insane. But,
yes.
There are a lot of places that aren't insane.
That's
but
right.
That's one of them. So
yes.
The opportunity was great up there. So I said, I'm going to invest in real estate. Took some real estate classes. And then when we had bought our new house up there, which was 10 times better than the old house. And I think I sold my old house for $117,000, and I think I paid like $121,000 for the new house. So a few thousand dollars more. But it was like, mm-hmm. if it was in California, it would have been
sure.
probably at that time, probably $400,000. Today it would be over $1 million for the first house we had. And I didn't pay cash for it. I just put the 20% down, and I financed the rest of it. 80% loan. Interest rates were 12.5%. My payment was $1,250. My payment in Calabasas was $200 a month, included mm-hmm. taxes and insurance. So I had a big
mm-hmm.
payment.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make some money. Otherwise, I'm going to be in big trouble. So this one guy was a plumbing company was coming out with solar energy. They were going to be pushing that. And I said, boy, that could be like G. Worthington Hipple. So I tried to set up an appointment with them, but they were too busy to talk mm-hmm. to me. And I was taking real estate classes because I was going to invest in real estate. And then I said, you know what? Real estate's a big ticket item. Maybe I'll sell real estate
mm-hmm.
and invest in real estate, do both. And
so
that's what I decided to do. And the market was terrible up here. People were starving to death as far as realtors went, and they told me how I was going to be a failure, and my friends in California told me that I was going to be a failure because it's a good old boys club in places like Coeur d'Alene and mm-hmm. things like that. Well, I became a good old boy real quick, and you can do that.
But your whole way of living is you can do that.
Yeah, that's right, but you can be more successful, I think, in a small town than you can in a big city. I knew, I lived in California for 40 years, knew mm-hmm. a lot of people, mm-hmm. moved to Idaho. In 3 years, I knew more people in mm-hmm. Idaho than I knew in California in my 40 years. Yes. And more important than that, more people knew me. I became a legend, not in my own mind, but I became a legend in Coeur d'Alene as far as real estate goes.
So I want to skip right to that because, again, I could listen to you for hours. Yeah, but we're running out of time.
I could probably talk for hours.
I know you could. I'm hoping we can do several of these from different parts of your life. What I want to say is I knew that you would become huge in Coeur d'Alene, and you are part of that history, of their history of growth and their history of whatever it's been since you got there. I know that you're involved in humanitarian causes. I know that you do a lot in this world. And last night you had mentioned that you came kind of later to that than some people.
What?
The humanitarian, because you
human
said,
rights.
You know, human rights.
Oh, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Because Carol was, yeah. you know, more aware of that. But what you said was, you didn't know there was anything wrong.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Because where I lived in California, I mean, I had people,
right.
black friends. I had, you know, other, you know, not,
right.
in fact, my customers. I had a lot of black customers. I loved black people,
Chinese people.
I loved everybody.
I know you do.
Yeah.
The point is that you're a really significant part of history. Have you written this down somewhere that it will last? Because here's my thought, and it takes patience. In the form of love letters to Paul, for example, I mean, if you had the energy, here's what I would do. I would write a series of letters and say, "Dear Paul, I'm writing to you. You're my son. I love you. I want you to know about this in my handwriting. And just put it aside. And your children will find it someday. And your grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, will find this someday. And they'll know what they came from."
Oh, I wanted to write a book for my kids. And I wanted to write it on being positive and having a positive mental attitude and that kind of stuff. And then I thought to myself, you know, before I do that, I should probably write a book about my life for my kids. And I did start that.
Okay. That could turn into a real... That could turn into an exceptional love letter if your first copy, you write something on the flyleaf to Paul so that there'll be something in your handwriting. Handwriting is king. You know that because you wanted Lonnie Anderson to do something in her handwriting on that picture.
Yes, and
you know how
just
valuable.
Went to the, that's what they talked about at the real estate convention.
Did they?
Thank you notes, handwritten, are still the best.
That's right.
Better than email. Thank you email is okay, but it doesn't do it.
It's a spurt, not a letter. Yes.
But a thank you, handwritten thank you note is the best.
And even a thank you note.
And it doesn't have to say a whole lot.
No, it doesn't.
No. Yeah.
But it's your signature. It's your handwriting. Forever, people will pick that up. And they'll be holding something that has felt the touch of your hand, which you can't do in an email.
That's absolutely
right.
There's
a personal sign. Oh, I hope you'll do all of that. Okay. And when you do, I want a copy.
You will.
With something on the flight leaf to me.
Okay. You got it.
Thank you. With a picture of you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for doing this. Just everything, listening to you is a motivation. You have so much to say and to teach. I'm so glad you did this. Thank you, dear.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Until next time, this is Janet Allen and
Marshall Mend
saying goodbye. And I hope you'll do more of these.
That's good. We'll do it.
Perfect. Okay. So please remember.
And
that
if you want to get a hold of me, just call Janet and she'll get you in touch with me.
I will. Remember, please, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter is a special occasion. It can be a book and the story of your life. People can do their own now. You don't even have to find a publisher. You can do it yourself. And
that's right.
Yes, and send it to your children and your friends and write something on that flyleaf and sign it and give it a kiss before you put it in the mail. So until next time, bye.